This episode is about minutes 81 through 85 of Solo, A Star Wars Story with new guest Lacey Gillerin from Resistance Broadcast. Hello there, and welcome to Star Wars Music Minute, where we celebrate the music and sound of Star Wars 5 cinematic minutes at a time. I'm Chrysanthi Tan, you can call me Xanthi, and today is about minutes 81 through 85 of Solo, A Star Wars Story, which I'm very sorry, but there is a droid death in this set of minutes, so... It's going to be the worst, yeah. So luckily, Lacey Gillerin from Resistance Broadcast is here with me today to talk about this movie and set of minutes. And as the co-creator of Make Solo 2 Happen, I am particularly excited to have you on the podcast this season. So welcome.
Awesome. Thank you for having me. As soon as you asked, you were like, do you want to talk Solo? I was like, you came to the right place. Solo is my jam. Yeah, we started, John Hoey on the podcast kind of made the joke like, hey, we should do t-shirts that say Make Solo 2 Happen. And then I was like, you know what? We should do a day where we just celebrate it. And I remember the night before back in 2019 when we were doing that first version of it, I was just like, you know what? If 10 people tweet, we're doing pretty good. And when we woke up, I was getting ready for work at the time. Yeah, it was like 7:30, 8 a.m. And we got a text from our buddy James on the podcast. And he was like, guys, it's trending. And we were like, what? And then it turned into this whole thing with, you know, John Kasdan's releasing plot lines and potential stuff. And Ron Howard retweeted our photo. I was like, this is insane. And it's grown beyond us. So like we now meet people that are like, oh, you guys like Make Solo 2 Happen too? And we're like, yes. But like, I couldn't ask for anything better because that's what you want, right? It's not about us. It's not about that we created it per se. It's more about like, we want more of Han and Chewie. Like Alden and Jonas did such a great job. There's so many stories there to tell. Kira is right there. So I'm really hoping based on John Kasdan's recent comments that he's like, hey, Jon Favreau, you want these characters? That they will use them.
I have to say, like, I definitely knew about Make Solo 2 Happen before I made the connection that it was you guys as well.
I love it. Yeah. I love it because I love that it's grown beyond us and it's just become like kind of a fan movement in the sense of like people have joined in being like, yes, I love it. And so many people have said like, I wish I saw it in the movie theater. I wish I gave it a chance. And I'm cool. Come join the club. We like Solo over here.
We'll get into talking about the minutes in a second, but there, I did hear you say, I think, I don't know if it was on Star Wars Minute or something, but how would you feel about now that Disney Plus is a thing? How would you like it as like a serialized like show like Mandalorian?
100%. That's what I prefer. Oh, okay. So the funny thing is when we started this whole thing, Mandalorian wasn't out yet. So we didn't know what to expect with Mandalorian and what that would look like. We just knew what we had gotten, which was a movie. As soon as we got the Mandalorian, I was like, series. I want a series. I want every episode they're getting into trouble, lots of hijinks, crazy new creatures. Because I'm a big creature person in Star Wars. And I feel like we don't get enough of aliens and creatures.
I'm a creature like, person too.
Yeah, give me all of that. So I feel like we could get more of that with the series and just what they're doing with the series looks great. From Mandalorian to Book of Boba Fett to now Kenobi. Oh my gosh. Yeah, total series. And I've been saying that from basically from when Mando released, like, I want a series instead.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's interesting to hear that you started it before that and how your feelings have morphed based on what we've already seen. Because I feel like through watching Solo, like, I feel like I wish I had it, this whole story, these characters, in a series, like even right. Solo 1, like even, you know, just the tease of the Calrissian Chronicles. I'm like,
oh my gosh, yes. And like I'm hoping that's what the Lando series is the Calrissian Chronicles. But we really don't know much about it. I know. So hopefully we find out more.
Well, anyway, talking about the music and sound of minutes 81 through 85 of Solo. And I particularly wanted to reach out to you to talk about the music because you got to interview John Powell. And I have, like, I watched that interview, like, a few times. And I've referred to it on the show a few times as well.
He was fabulous. He was absolutely amazing.
He really was. And you all asked, like, good questions, too. Like, you got some good stories out of him. And there were a few things in there where you and who was your co-host? Did you have both your co-hosts on that one?
Yep. So John and James. John usually wears a backwards baseball cap. I don't know if he was wearing it that episode. He kind of starts us off every episode. And James actually used to be in a punk band, I guess. I don't know them very well, but he used to be in a punk band. So like he's very like musically inclined and like knows kind of like inner workings of music. I'm on the side of like, I like how it sounds. It sounds good. I'm crying. Like, I love the music. But yeah, John Powell was amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. That was really a good interview, even though like he answered certain questions in a way that you all were like, yeah. Like when he started saying like a bunch of composer names and everything, you all were like, yeah, I guess I'll have to look that up later or whatever. But like the fact that you got him to a place to say that was like really meaningful to someone who did know instantly who he was talking about. I was like, I'm glad that someone got that out of him. So I benefited from it.
Awesome. That's always the thing is like, I want, when we interview people on the show, we always want to make sure that we're not just interviewing for ourselves. Cause I feel like that's the thing nowadays that people do is like, they're like, oh, this character meant a lot to me, because it's not about us. It's about all of us as fans want to know all these different things about Star Wars and the inner workings of it. So I love that you got that out of it, because there were a couple people that you mentioned that I was like, I have to come back to this. But yeah, he was just so funny. Like, I loved his sense of humor and his stories about how originally it was supposed to be, it was going to be him. And then when Ron Howard took over, it was going to be Hans Zimmer. Yeah. And then it switched back to him. And I was like, oh, I'm so glad it did. Not that Hans Zimmer isn't great, because you're going to ask me later,
but he's
on my list. Yeah. Of great composers. So I'm just glad it was John Powell. And he's such a fan of Makes Little Two Happen. And he like tweets about it, or he posts on Instagram about it all the time. So I'm game.
He's been really generous to like the music community as well. Or I don't know if that's the right way to phrase it. But like in that he has posted a few of his like score snippets, you know, to kind of read along while we're listening. And I mean, that's just, it's really valuable to be able to see what it looks like what the score looks like. Because there's no like official, like there really never is pretty much an officially released like score, like, you know, the paper score, for soundtracks. So,
right.
To be able to see
that's so cool.
is really cool.
It reminds me of the thing on Twitter that they do where they run the script with the scene underneath it.
So yeah, it's like that.
Is running. Yeah, that's cool.
It's the music. Yeah, he does. He'll post like the music version of that sometimes. So here in this set of minutes, there's so much to talk about. It's such like musically, it's a very dense set of minutes, but in a very like.
I was very surprised reading, like, because when you're listening to it originally, when you're watching the movie, you're like, oh, this is so wonderful. But then when you're like actually kind of studying it a little bit, you're like, there are so many different beats and moments in here.
Yeah, like it shifts like on a dime a few times, and it like explores so many different ways of expressing itself in a way. Like, you know, we're keeping within the realm of like one or two tracks on the soundtrack. Actually, we're mostly in the track Breakout. Or if you're on the deluxe version, like half, you know, part of that long extra deluxe Mind Mission track, but more specifically.
Thank you for the deluxe version.
Yes, seriously. but on the regular version, we're basically in the track Breakout. And so it kind of shows like how many beats, so to speak, a single cue or track can move through. Like it's pretty astounding. And like listening to it, you can hear that it's obviously scoring different things that are happening on screen, because it keeps, you know, switching. And here, because we get L3's death, like we get particularly emotional moments.
Right.
Yeah. So let's warm up by listening to the beginning of the minutes.
Sure.
Okay, already so much has happened, and that's just been 29 seconds.
I know.
What do you think of like, you're kind of being thrown into the action right away. What do you make of the music here?
I loved how from the start of this 5-minute kind of session, we're thrown right into Star Wars, like swashbuckling adventures. Like Han is on the game, you know, he's heading out, he's stealing the coaxium. You get punched in the face with like, you're in a Star Wars adventure, which I loved about this movie in general, is like you get those beats and those moments that are very kind of like Indiana Jones, like very John Williams-esque. Because I feel like with some of the other movies that weren't done by John Williams, you have moments, but they didn't feel like to me, this soundtrack feels like John Williams. And this segment especially feels like one of those adventure movies that he's known for.
Swashbuckling is definitely a word that I was thinking of too. Well, I mean, I was actually thinking like when the rhythms go like, well, we'll play it again, but it was actually reminding me of like Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yes.
Especially with
it's the dun, 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 dun.
And, yes, and then also the like duh, 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 like kind of yeah. the count, like the beats. Yeah. And just within that little span, we are hearing that's the young Han Solo heroic version of the theme. And then we're also hearing a bit of the fakery motif, which is the dee, 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 or, I'll point it out when it happens. It's kind of right. It kind of goes by fast, but. But yeah, let's hear again. Hey, I'm Chewie's friend, huh? And we'll talk through it.
Mm-hmm.
So this like triumphant fanfare.
It sounds very Indiana Jones to me.
It does. So pirates, this is the pirates part.
Yes. Like you see Jack Sparrow on the end of a ship. Yes. There. Yeah.
And this is fakery.
It's usually, there's just so much going on musically, action-wise, sound effects.
Yes. Yes. I think something that I found like really, well, that's been like a very, it's been common throughout this whole film where like when we compare it to the soundtrack version, it's like, oh, we weren't even hearing that at all right. in the movie because right. of like all the sound effects. And I do remember, I think it was in your interview with John Powell, where mm-hmm. he said perhaps the music during the heist could have been louder.
Yes, yes. And he definitely talks about layering too, like layering different themes and motifs and stuff throughout. And it's funny because in prepping for this episode, I watched the clips, specifically the ones that you'd asked to watch and whatnot. And in my mind, I'm like, oh, I should go listen to the soundtrack. And I'm like, no, I shouldn't, because you want to talk about exactly what you hear in the movie. And in the soundtrack, like you said, you hear everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it is.
It's unfortunate that you do miss a, like he puts all this work in and it gets buried by like bah, 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 bah.
That's funny. Although from a, if I were talking to a sound editor, they might say like all their good sound effects were just blasted over by the music.
Yeah, right. So it's a give and take of like, okay, but my stuff needs to be heard too.
Totally. I need to interview like one of the editors, one of the mixers or something.
Oh, that would be cool.
Who have to make those decisions. Yeah. Note, future self. But there are so many things to consider and so many, I guess as a composer, you probably would know to an extent like when things will be covering it up. Like I think in John Powell's writing, I can hear a lot where obviously there's space for dialogue. Like when they're at the sabacc table and everything, the music is pretty mellow and predictable.
Yeah, there are tons of moments where it goes up and down that I noted where it's like it gets really quiet and then it picks up again, and then he does that very, very well. Like it isn't just like a straight shot of tempo and beat and, you know, hitting you with music. It's like he goes with what's happening in the scene.
Yeah. And so we're only 30 seconds in, but let's continue listening and see what comes up next. Okay. So. So this is still the heroic Han Solo theme. It's a lot of shooting.
I love the moment where he gets the gun from Lando and he says Han, because it goes like dun dun.
Oh,
it's at like 38 seconds of your clip.
I will have to let's catch that again, and then we can also catch that like when L3 says rebellion, we hear a bit of L3's theme, and then Right after that, we're going to hear Han Solo's searching theme. So, you know, Han has three themes that John Williams contributed to the film. There's the heroic version, the searching, and then searching variant. So we've already heard heroic, and now we're going to hear searching after L3, which is after this thing that we're about to check out right now. So wait, what? So it's Han is what Lando says.
He says Han, and he throws him the gun. And when he gets the gun, there's two notes that of him like grabbing the gun.
Ooh, okay. Okay, cool.
It's really subtle.
Okay. Oh. It's like two drum hits.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I heard that. The brass is leading the way. Follow me.
Star Wars loves a good brass intro.
It really does. That's a hint of L3.
Mm-hmm.
Now this is Han Solo searching. Okay, I'm going to cut it off there because I want to point out that his searching variant, which, I mean, I'll ask you, what do you most associate that theme with?
The beginning of the movie with the car.
Yeah,
because like even certain notes I hear, like the him turning the car and going, come on, come on, come on. And then like him taking off with the logo reveal. Like that's what I think of.
Same, 100%, me too. Cool. So in this situation, I mean, I also see like the image of him, even though it happens a little bit before, but just like hitting the like the sparks flying at the beginning.
It's a good, yeah, yeah.
It's a pretty good opening. Like musically, I love the opening.
I think it's perfect, yeah.
So what is happening here is that the searching variant, and this, you know, is a common... It the technique makes sense, but it's ascending, like its tonal center, its tonal center keeps ascending. So it kind of is like raising the stakes every time. So if we listen back, it's like, then
yeah, it's like building.
So yeah, it just keeps, it's called like imitation music is like when you repeat something, but it's not necessarily like, it's not a carbon copy. You might be transposing it a little bit, or you might like kind of flip it around a little bit, but you know, these imitations or whatnot. So that's happening.
In my brain, it's going, oh no, tension's building. What's about to happen?
Yeah. That's a good way to put it, which is what's happening. And then you have to like, I guess listeners, if you don't exactly remember where this is going to go, just, when the tension is building, it has to go somewhere eventually. So where do you think it's going to go? Do you think it's going to fizzle out? Do you think it's going to explode into something really big? Or do you think it's just going to be like a scene change and then just completely change directions? I mean, these are things that composers usually, you know, have to try to figure out how to maneuver out of or maneuver into the next thing. Or editors have to figure out how to cut into the next thing.
In Star Wars, it usually means someone's gonna die. It's usually building
whether
to
a person, droid, or ship.
Oh no, prepare yourself.
Yeah. All right, so let's hear where it's going. The gang motif.
Where's that three?
Uh-oh. And...
No, Lando, get back here!
Okay, this is a good spot to stop. I'm so sorry, L3. But
the switch to strings and just strings, ugh, it just immediately rips your heart out. You're like, oh no, this is not going to end good.
I mean, the part where I already know it's not going to end good is when... it starts slowing down and like we're already on this pretty tense path, but then when it slows down to the dee-dee, it's just somehow it has just gotten more tense.
Right.
And it's like you've entered the realm of like the final, it keeps getting, you know, it's like the whole thing is just escalated. We're in a different realm altogether. It's not just, oh, let's make sure to get the coaxium or whatever. It's like, now we're in.
There are real risks here. Yeah.
Yeah. Now this is like a more, yeah, L3.
And there are lots of moments throughout this segment where it's like, you're having fun. Oh, fun moment. Comedy. Terrible thing happens. Oh, lots of tension. Great moment. Low. Like, there's a lot of highs and lows throughout this whole segment that I'm like, when I was going through it, I was like, oh my gosh, there are so many like emotional beats like this that you're just like caught off guard a little bit.
Yeah. And it's amazing how many this track goes through. It's like, you know, it's like a 6 minute and 15 second cue, and we're starting about like a minute or so into it. And so we finish, we finish it out in the set of minutes. So like we do get the vast majority of the track in this set of minutes, and it just, it goes to so many different places that it's a little bit of like an emotional, workout really.
Totally. It's definitely a go and rewatch, re-listen scene, because there's just so much.
Yeah. But also, if you're feeling emotionally spent for the day, like listening to it and letting yourself go along with the journey could be taxing because it's doing a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So let's, so with that, let's go through it again.
It really, it's just like perfectly done with the scene though. Cause there is so, like, you could go back and watch that scene 10 times and notice something different every time. And I think that's the same with the music, and John Powell does it so well that every time you go back, you hear like a little note here or a melody or something going on that you didn't pick up the first time.
I thought you were talking about the action on screen, but I think it applies that to the too. Action on screen too.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Totally.
Because I think the music here is very guiding. I think it's a strong guiding hand here.
Sure.
Because I know I've mentioned this in previous episodes and I'll keep saying it, but like when there's lots of bang, bang, run around, shoot, fire. Oh my gosh. Like I kind of freak out and I'm just like, I don't know what's happening. Like I just get kind of like, I don't know, like wake me up when it's over.
Flipping over things.
Just tell me the outcome in 5 minutes. Like it's hard to keep track of that and to know what is important about it when there's so much happening. And I think that's the hard thing in storytelling, is like the act of filmmaking or whatever, like the storytellers have to guide the audience. You know, it's not a documentary. You're not just showing everything without some kind of editing or some kind of like nudging people to pay attention to this and not that type of thing. So the music is one thing that kind of helps me understand where I'm focusing, you know, so that like when I start hearing this music, I can zoom in on what's happening with L3 and Lando rather than being like, there's so much happening. So I'm just going to pick that person in the corner that just hit a droid. I'm going to focus on
that. This scene is so chaotic. Totally.
So I appreciate like the music's like, that's, this is a moment where I think the music is doing, I mean, what it's doing a lot of the legwork in terms of keeping the audience emotionally on board. Because imagine it without music, just like, you'd be like,
it would be too much. It would turn into a Michael Bay film. No offense, Michael Bay. Like it just Transformers, you know, like too much going on with no real music cues. And you're just like, I can't keep up. That's what it would turn into.
Yeah, totally. Okay. So here we are listening to it again. Actually, let's go back further so we can hear the moment it turns. Okay. So we're kind of going one, two, three.
Where's L3?
It's hard to hear, but the beat is still fast. And then here, this is where it changes. Oh my gosh, that part just gets me.
And like all those kind of like, like they're being, the music to me is like, watch out, it's happening. Look at all the things that are going on around you. Someone's going to die. What's going on? And then you see like every kind of person in their crew being like, we got to go, we got to go. And then Han is the one that then decides obviously not to, to leave him.
Yeah, I think this is, okay, musically, I think this is a really effective use of what's called a pedal point. Have you heard of
Are you? No, I haven't.
Okay, so cool.
I'm ready to learn all the things today because I don't know how to read music. I don't know any. I just know, hey, this sounds good.
I love it. All right, so here a pedal point is basically a note that remains the same while other notes are maybe changing around it. So it kind of the name, I believe the name comes from, you know, like organs, like pipe organs, how there's the part that you play and then there's the part with your feet that are pedals.
Yeah.
And you organists will like press a pedal and keep it down for a while doing stuff with their fingers and they'll change pedals. And you don't change pedals nearly as much as you do all the piano playing stuff on top. So a pedal point would be like you leave that down for a while and keep it down while other stuff is happening. And it is a very common feature in lots of music, especially film music, but it's not, I think in some film scores, not this one, it is exploited to the point where it just becomes like annoying, but that doesn't apply to this score. So I don't find it annoying to hear it here. I find it like a perfect use of it. So basically
it's awesome to hear you talk like this because I am on the same kind of level with like filmmaking because that's what I went to school for. Ah. So like, you know, rule of thirds and stuff like that, 180 degree rule. I'm like, and like when stuff's not done right or something's over the top, it sticks out to me when it sticks out to no one else. So hearing you say this specifically about the music is so interesting to me because it's like, I've never even considered this, but like hearing you say it, I'm like, oh my gosh, that is so crazy.
Oh my gosh. I want to talk to you more about film stuff because I will learn so much from you. That's cool. I didn't know you went to film school. So yay.
I went to like communication school, but did filmmaking there. I didn't go to like an actual film school.
Well, studied film.
Yes.
I haven't studied film at all. So a pedal point in this case, it's a G. So we're going to hear basically this repeated. I'll play it a little bit lower. We're going to hear this repeated. Mm-hmm. And then on top, we're going to hear things changing. And basically what's happening is, let's go back and hear it. So what's happening on top gets progressively farther away from what's happening on bottom. So it's almost like it's stretching. If we think of the pedal point as like almost the home where they're starting, and I would say visually like, or in the story, the home is like the falcon. You know, they're kind of like, come back, come back, come back.
So is the pedal point holding the note?
Yes. It doesn't have to necessarily hold it. Like here, we can listen to it. Let's actually listen to it on the clean track so we can actually hear it. Okay, it's a little after that. So we're in breakout if people want to follow along.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Okay, so I'm just going to rewind a little bit. Here.
Oh my gosh, I didn't even realize that.
Yeah. So on top, things are changing, but on the bottom, it's not changing. And it's almost like, for me, it highlights the like how spun out, like Lando is like, I know I need to do this, but like, I'm still reaching out in this other direction, even though it gets progressively more unlikely and progressively progressively kind of losing it, like knowing that
it's kind of his denial away. Of what yes. how bad it is. Yeah,
I think that's a perfect way of describing it. And
yeah,
that's like what that part means to me musically.
Yeah, so interesting.
So we'll hear the transition will stick out more here. See, we're in pirate mode. It's fast.
Yeah, it's like heroic. On moment, yeah.
And then he's like, please. And then when the pedal point eventually just cuts out, and it's sort of like, it's no, Lando, it's over. It cuts out.
Right.
And it's just the strings playing in the stratosphere, like up really, really high.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's
such a contrast between the high and then the low, low. Yeah.
Yeah. It's very like Barbara Adagio for strings, like up there, if you're familiar with that piece.
I'm not, but I will look it up later.
Well, it is a Ooh, that's, I see, the thing is, I bet you know it, but don't even know that you know it.
Oh, really?
Totally.
You're going to make me feel smart right now?
You absolutely know it. Like, I should have probably Googled this before today, but if you
it's okay.
No. I mean, like, there, I bet listeners know it too, whether you know it or not, because it's used in so many films in a very tragic way. Is it an Apocalypse Now? I'm not sure. But it's like, when you hear it, you absolutely will. You will know it. You just trust me. You'll know it. And
it
is four strings, as the title says, Adagio for strings. And it gets into this, like, it kind of, it's very slow. So Adagio is a tempo marking that means slow. And
Know it's the name of one of the songs on Tron Legacy soundtrack.
I love that soundtrack. P.S.
They name one. I think one of the songs is named that. And I'm like, yes, this is a good one.
So I'm clicking on a YouTube video that is going to play Adagio for strings. Let's hope that there's no ad. Oh, yes. Okay. Though there is buffer time. So I'll let it buffer for a little bit. Oh, no, here we go.
Which movie is this?
It's not a movie. It's just playing the piece.
It's just...
So it starts there. And then, spoiler for the piece, I'm sorry, people. It gets to a place where it eventually climbs up very high. And it is evocative in a similar way that I feel this moment here is. I'm here.
Oh, yes. Yep. This is death to me. That noise is death. That's usually someone's dying or something tragic has happened. And it's usually a very close up shot of someone's face when they're about to start crying or they're in shock or something like that.
Yeah. It's also used like when a public figure dies, oftentimes they'll like perform this piece.
And then everybody starts moving in slow motion as soon as that hits.
Probably. I mean, like at that point where that, like, it kind of starts where I started playing it at the beginning, and that piece, it takes like 6 minutes to climb up to that place. And so it kind of just slowly like rips your heart out. And also just like, I recommend watching if you can find a symphony, just performing it, that would be best, obviously. But like, if you can't, I recommend probably watching a YouTube video of a live performance of it over listening to a recording, even though live performance, there's always going to be more artifact, you know, more artifacts of sound and whatever. You'll get over that quickly, because I think seeing the anguish like on the musicians' faces, and as someone who I have played that piece many times, performed that piece many times in orchestra, it is like uniquely taxing to play sustained loud notes for that long and to climb that high and to kind of like do it so slowly. It is a really weird like flow state that you get into where you don't want to stop at a certain point. Like, you have to finish it. It's like once it starts
sounds
climbing,
taxing.
It is taxing. And so like, I think it's powerful to watch like musicians playing it, but
absolutely. Were you at Celebrate? Were you in the panel with John Williams for Celebration?
I was. Were you?
Did you lose it? Yes. I was.
I lost it.
So good.
I have to say, I lost it more for Duel of the Fates.
Yes.
When they started.
Because I knew exactly what was happening when they walked out. I knew exactly what they were. I knew what was going on.
I was sitting so far back that I didn't see at any prep. I just heard it. And I was like, oh my God, there's a choir and they're singing Duel of the Fates. Oh my God. Oh my God.
Oh my gosh. It was wild. I liked how music was the highlight of that panel.
Me too. Really me too. It. Me yeah. too. yay. Okay. So this part here is where L3, where everything is stopping, basically time is stopping, is that's what it also sounds like, is just everything else can just shut up now. And in this moment, we also hear, like if we go back to the actual, clip from the film, whereas before it is very dominated, one could say, by blaster fire and the like. Here, it's almost like everything else falls away for a bit. Like, mm-hmm. it's all about Lando. Like, there's that tunnel vision that you get when your adrenaline's going and like grief is taking over and just you're trying to reason with the force or whatever. We do hear a bit of that when Lando and L3 are having their moments. So yeah, let's see. You can hear that the crowds in the background, they're muted.
Yeah.
They're very soft. You can hear it, but it's like they just turned it down.
It's well done.
And it's a little hard to it's a little harder to parse out because it's slower, but we are hearing Han Solo's heroic theme there. It's just slower. Mm-hmm. And it is mixed in, or it is, the high strings haven't gone away either, so we're still holding, you know, that element. But when Han is trying to, you know, run in and get his friend, we hear his theme stretched out. And so that is called augmentation. By the way, when you take a piece, you know, a snippet of music and you mm-hmm. augment the amount of time, like you stretch it to fill a larger amount of time. So augmentation means like you'll hear the themes slower because it's stretching out, it's taking up more space. And then the opposite of that would be diminution, which is where if you hear a theme that's usually slow, but you actually hear it really fast. And so like it keeps repeating, but it's fast. That's the opposite. That's diminution. And John Powell does play a lot with those techniques in this score. Particularly I hear it in the main Han Solo theme. There's a lot of like the rhythms and like how fast or slow it is will change. Sometimes I'm like, is this the heroic theme? Cause it's stretched out to sound almost like something else, but it is. So
that's super interesting. Cause I think of it on the video end where if you're making a video project, you need to fill space and you have a little bit longer than what the clip is, you then slow the clip down to fit that little gap. You're like, oh, I need to fill that.
It's kind of like the same thing. Yeah. That's so funny. And I feel like visually we are seeing a bit of that, aren't we? Or is it ever slow-mo? It just feels, or does the music just make it feel almost slow-mo-y?
I think it's more of, in that moment with Lando and L3, like you said, like it fades away music-wise. And also on screen, you'll see the depth of field is much more shallow. It's very like blurred out in the background. Like there's stuff going on, but it's more just about them. They're central to the screen. Like you're just seeing them and you're not really paying attention to what's going on behind them. So I think that on all levels, it's being reflected from the acting to the scene to the music.
Yeah, that depth of field, like sonically and visually.
Right.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I never even thought of that.
And as for Chewie saying goodbye to Sagwa, I have here, I wrote in that they have a little, John Powell put in a moment of like the asteroid field thing from Empire Strikes Back. There's like a little, like a couple notes from that.
Can you hum it? Or maybe we
can. I'd have to hear it.
Yeah, let's do it again. Is it before?
Trying to think. Right there. Dun, 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 dun.
So what that
right
to
there,
me,
did you hear it?
I don't know if I'm hearing the same. Okay, what I'm hearing is, I'll put it on the screen. What I'm hearing is a Han and Leia reference.
Oh, maybe. I'm hearing like the dun, 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 which I think is the asteroid field, but it might be carbonite.
I'm thinking of carbonite.
Okay, maybe that's what it is. I knew it was something from Empire Strikes Back.
I'll put it up.
Yeah. Yes, yes, yes.
All right. Cool. So,
I did hear something.
I am convinced. I have obviously not gotten confirmation on this from John Powell himself, but to me, the second I heard that, I was like, interesting. That's reminds me of Hanalei. Is that a Hanalei reference, or am I totally reading into it too much? But
I think it totally is, because in our interview with him, he did talk about how he was trying to work in things from other things John did. John Williams, obviously,
yes,
the
yes,
whole
yes.
name. John,
the two Johns.
John Williams.
The two Johns.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it is, because it's so kind of obvious, but it's interesting because I'm like, oh, why would that be referenced here? But maybe there's something that I'm not picking up on.
Well, I think it's interesting referenced there because, I mean, Han and Leia is like, obviously they're in love. And at the end of Empire Strikes Back, obviously they're saying goodbye, or, you know, Leia's losing Han potentially, and there's saying goodbye of people that care about each other very much. So here we have Lando and L3. So I feel like it is adding weight to
right.
Lando and L3's, whatever the nature of their relationship doesn't matter, but
relationship,
I think it says something about their connection and like just the power, or like how the tragedy of having to say goodbye.
Right. And the connection between a person and their droid, regardless if they're a droid or a human or a creature or an alien or whatever, it's like that found family thing that we see throughout Star Wars.
Yeah.
And I think that's also reflected in the Chewie thing too. It's like he met someone from his own kind and he has to say goodbye, and he made the choice to leave them behind for his new family. There is that kind of sadness there.
Totally. And we as mere humans who are watching Star Wars and are not the Wills, we can't decide what is important enough to get Han and Leia treatment. Like, we can't determine whether, oh, the Wookiees just met, or, you know, we can't like determine what's should be important to the characters on screen. You know, if we were to consider Star Wars universe as, you know, like a world to take seriously and to take at face value. So that is something that music and other aspects of filmmaking can do to help us get there, to help us understand.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, I don't know, it's such an earnest like placement of that, that I feel like it makes me want to say, okay, yes. If you're telling me
absolutely.
This, then yes.
I think, I'm sure you talk about this all the time, but Star Wars wouldn't be what it is without music. So without the music, like the soundtrack, you're not going to have the connections to these characters that you do as an outside perspective, someone looking in on this adventure. And I think that the music is what ultimately pulls you in. Yes, the acting's great, the costumes are great, but for me, that music is that baseline that kind of loops you and pulls you back in, mm-hmm. and adds an element of like emotion,
mm-hmm.
that
and
you wouldn't get normally by just watching the clip.
I think so. I think that is definitely true. And I think the fact that music is harder for many people to talk about in words, and it is perhaps operates on a more subconscious level, like all of sound in general, mm-hmm. like including the sound effects. Like sometimes we don't even think about like a sound, you know, an aspect of sound design, because it just, when it's done right, the sound that say a button makes is just inevitable. Like it doesn't occur to us until we like know what it's like to make a film and know that like, actually you don't get just cool sounds just from touching stuff.
Right.
Every little element takes like intentional work, but it's not as easy to notice as like, oh, the costumes or like this type of wipe or something. It's more like,
right. It's not like a tangible thing that you can touch. It's more of a feeling. I know this is like obviously Star Wars talking about like force and stuff, but like it's a feeling you get. It's kind of just like that thing that's there that you connect with, even though you can't see it.
Yeah. And it feels inevitable. Like the sound
right.
a lightsaber makes, it's like, how could you even imagine a lightsaber without the sound?
Or a TIE fighter or anything. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So whenever I start to like wax poetic with a guest about like, oh, the art of it all, I'm like, wait, where do I can get lost in that for quite some time. So wait, oh yeah. Han Solo.
I don't mind
princess.
At all.
okay. So in case some, in, okay. I will connect the dots a little bit more obviously, in case not everyone's like, oh yeah, from those two notes for sure, Easter egg.
Right.
That would be understandable as well. Lacey just happened to get that immediately.
Because I was asked to listen to it in detail, I probably wouldn't have picked it up on first kind of watch through, you know?
That's why we do this.
I appreciate it.
So I'm going to play a little bit from Empire Strikes Back.
Mm-hmm.
So we can hear some. So this is Han Solo and the Princess. Pay attention here. Well, actually, the next time. Sorry. It's a very complex theme, very long theme.
I'm not gonna lie, listening to this, I feel like I'm watching the Olympics, like figure skating. Because the people are just like, and now she's gonna go for the triple lux.
That's so fun. Okay,
she
here.
Fell in practice. Yeah.
That's the part.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Are you familiar with the complete catalog of the musical themes of Star Wars? You'll love it if you haven't.
I definitely have listened to everything, so I could pick up on themes.
I mean, it is literally, it's like a living document that that music theorist, film musicologist Frank Lehman keeps updated with all of the musical themes of Star Wars.
Oh, I love that. No, I am unaware of that.
So yes, yeah, so if you go to franklehman.com/Star Wars, you can download it for free. And he's also on Twitter and will tweet about stuff all the time. And he's been on the show three times at this point.
Hi, Frank.
Yeah. So it is a resource that I definitely recommend. I will say it is full of notation. Like, it'll show the notation for his own transcriptions of the themes, but it's also like very hyperlinked. So if you click on, say, Han and Leia B section, you can click on that and it'll take you to the timestamp of like the moment where you can hear that. So you can actually hear them all too. And there's also things like the thematic census at the end, where it's sort of, he counts up the number of themes per movie and how many times, say, the Force theme appears in the different movies.
Oh my God, I love that.
And everything. So yeah, I definitely It is a very interesting resource to look at, especially if you are a nerd and like Star Wars music.
I honestly think on our recent episode of the Resistance broadcast, I think we're talking about the music specifically for Kenobi, and I remember we were asking, like, I wonder how many times the Force theme popped up. So now, thanks to Frank, and I'm going to be a genius on my next episode.
And he is updating it with Kenobi stuff as well.
Perfect.
So,
perfect.
Yes. I know that there is, I know every time I mention him, it's like a drinking game at this point. How many times I will plug this resource, because it's something that I think all fans, you know, he makes it available for everyone.
I love it. So. I'm a big person of giving credit where credit is due. So I'm all for it.
And it took takes so much work to do this. So definitely want to spread it around. Okay. So there is, I'll put it up on screen. So if people are watching this on YouTube, I also did tweet it a while ago, but I don't think anyone understood what I was talking about, except for Ender. Auric Fonts agreed with me. So, but I have this thing that where I'm notating what I'm talking about, and I'm talking about, this spot at Breakout at 3:42 or Extra Deluxe Mind Mission at 7:48. Or just this part in the minutes that we have been talking about. It's in technically Solo minute 83, if you want to count it that way. But what's happening that reminds me of the Han and Leia moment is, okay, oops. Wait, what am I doing? Okay. It's this particular way of arriving at this chord, and the chords in this case particularly are A flat and to D7. but the chords themselves don't matter. It's the it's the function of the chords in this particular key. So you could transpose it to a higher one, but in the melody, we're hearing these half steps. It's like, it's so evocative for me. It's like Sohan and Leia to me, where the theme.
I definitely picked up on that. I just didn't know where I could place it. I was like, I've heard this.
Yeah, exactly. And it is, it like scrunches into this like point where you just want it to keep going, or like I want it to keep going. Like you want it to keep going right there. But it's just, it's very schmaltzy and in its use right here, and just tugs at my heartstrings. So John Powell, if that was intentional, this spot right here, that is a very nice and subtle reference. If not, then I'm reading into it and that's fine, because that's what it means to me.
I'm reading into it too.
Thank you.
I wrote it down.
Yeah, we both read into it. So that, I think that means it's correct. Right. Yeah. while I'm here, I keep forgetting to do this, but I'm going to throw up on YouTube just a quick visual for where we are in the minutes. Though I think you know where we are, because we've been in this set of minute. We've been in this scene on Kessel for a few weeks now. Yeah, you can see Lando. You can see Chewie holding Lando, holding L3 in the right frame. And it's, oh my gosh, Lando's face is just
pain. Yeah.
Very pained. Very pained. All right. So let's get back to where we are in the minutes now that we have passed that Han and Leia moment. All right. And we move on to something else. So now we're back to like action is back on.
Yep. You hear us destroying everything.
I find this part.
It's okay. You'll be fine.
That is one of my favorite shots in Star Wars.
Can you describe the shot?
The shot is, you can actually hear it when you're listening to it. It's like the music goes really quiet, and it's when Han is shooting and he's walking backwards while shooting, and the camera is following him in one continuous take right up the ramp into the Falcon, into kind of the living area, and then it cuts. So it's one long take. There's no cuts that are made. So that so when it goes quiet, he's going into the Falcon, and there's like a quiet, like if you play it back, there's like a quietness, and then it picks up again.
Oh, wow. I didn't even notice that. Okay, I want to hear that. Is it after this?
Right after this, right here.
It's okay. You'll be fine.
Oh.
So like it's shoot, quiet into the Falcon.
And then you can hear that it starts to get echoey because of the location.
Yes.
Yeah, totally.
It's cool.
Wow. I didn't realize it. I didn't notice that it was like one shot there. Mm-hmm.
That means it's done well.
Yes, exactly. I did notice the jazzy snazzy trumpet. That's what I wrote. I don't know. I don't know. Which it's quite peculiar in context. We're like going from Adagio for strings to like, you know, we went from like Pirates of the Caribbean to like Adagio for strings. And now we have this, I find, hilarious little, well, let's just play it. I'll just play it. Okay. It's after this, obviously. So this is the augmented Han Solo. But we still have the strings. And this is, we're getting to the Han and Leia moment. I have chills here. And now it's, we're back. Come on, no, we really need to get out of here. Mm-hmm. And do you hear that? It kind of keeps climbing. This part. It's like you can enter your Disney ride.
I think it is him so entering funny. The Falcon. That is interesting. I didn't even realize that because there's just so much going on in the scene.
Yeah, there's so much, and the underscore just keeps going. It just like right out of it. Now the violins. Key change.
Is this where they're saying Han? Yeah, this is where he jumps in the seat.
Yeah. And so like the underscore, like that beat that is underneath is there for these other themes to like float on top of when it's appropriate for them to come in. So like we were hearing L3 a little bit, like super subtle. And then obviously Rebel fanfare when Han.
So is that beat what ties them all together? So by having that beat on the, like underneath everything, it's like no matter what you bring in, it's going to match because you've got that beat.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Okay.
I mean, it's sort of like, you know, you're playing with a band. You're like, all right, just keep vamping. And then when people are ready to come in, they'll come in. But like, you just keep going.
Nice.
And that is something that is more of a feature of, that is something that is more present in, say, this score or like a John Powell score than a John Williams score, which tends to be more.
His feels like a wave, John Williams. It's
yeah,
like you
John
go,
Williams.
You weave.
100%. Like, I think John Williams' flow, like John Williams has control of the flow, like the whole time it seems. And a more modern score will often have more things like this. Like it to me, it's a bigger sense of like modularity, like flexibility, that goes along with the necessity of creating something cut to digital film.
Right.
But I don't know like exactly the thought process behind this, but it does serve as like a very, a glue basically.
Yeah.
Like a pad. Like
it just seems like you have more.
It's a baseline.
Right. You have more kind of ability to make changes if you need to. Whereas John Williams isn't going to change his score. Like it is what it is. You just take it and you say, thank you so much. And you change your movie.
Well, John Williams does change his scores quite a bit, but like in a different way than other composers. One reason being that John Williams isn't up with his own, he doesn't do the digital tools so much.
Right.
So he's kind of in a different technology game than other people because he can be. He will have an live orchestra. Like he doesn't have to do a mock-up on a computer, which is what most composers have to do. They do their digital, like with their sample instruments and everything. They have to do that before getting, you know, the studio, the people to pay for like an orchestra.
Right.
Yeah. But John Williams gets to do his demos with a live orchestra.
Gosh, seeing him was like seriously like life goals for me at Celebration. I cried. It was amazing. And it was one of those things that like I'll never be able to top this in my life.
Was it your first time?
It was.
I'm so glad that you got to.
Yeah.
Because
it was great.
I saw him for the first time at the Hollywood Bowl last summer. And
oh, nice.
It was just also pretty spectacular. And I was just I'm so glad I got to do this because I'm just cherishing the years we have left of him. So,
right. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm happy for all the people at Celebration that got to see him. Because wow, just the fact that he came, I was like, oh my God, how did you get him?
I know. I'm on East Coast, so he doesn't really come around here that much. It's like every once in a while, but mostly he's on West Coast because like he's 90 years old. He's not really going to travel around like crazy. But it was unreal. When that orchestra, I was like, oh my God, he's coming out. I just like, you're like, oh my gosh, Santa's coming. Oh my God.
Like, he's so humble. Happening. It's like, it's absolutely, it's so ridiculous. He's so humble. We just got that jazzy snazzy, I'll stand by that description, section. And now they're on the Falcon. So things sound different. musically, and like we were saying, just the sound mix, the sound treatment, this, the way that things are mic'd, just, you can hear the sound through sound, listening to sound specifically, like in universe, like sound effects and dialogue, tell us things about the shape, the size, the furnishings of the space that we're in.
Right. It's crazy. I never thought of it that way, but yes, 100%.
I think about it a lot when comparing, like, say, rebel encampments with, say, Imperial or First Order places, whereas, like, right, the First Order places will have such an austere, like, almost like vacuous, I don't know, like, sometimes, like, very heavily reverberating, like, sometimes there'll be, like, an echo or something. Like, you can hear it and be like, oh, they do not put fluffy couches in there because there's so many reflections.
Right. Shiny floors only.
Yeah. And not too many people. And it's just a big booming auditorium. Whereas the rebel spaces will be, like, really intimate, or, you know, or say Luke's hut in The Last Jedi. So super intimate. So you're not hearing, like, echo. You're just, like, right there with them. It's just a small little hut. Like, just sounds so different. Just the way that their dialogue sounds.
Yeah. And I think that when we were talking about that shot before where he goes up the ramp, like in that little tunnel, you hear it with the music too, that it's like you said, like you're in this enclosed space.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Now let's continue. The background gives me some Empire vibes. A New Hope.
Yep.
Here's the snazzy part, which in the context of the film, you can't even hear that much because of the shooting.
It's okay. You'll be fine.
Now hear Lynn.
Barista! It's not responding. Not responding.
Han, get us out of here.
It's not responding.
Han, now.
On it.
Here comes one of my favorite cues.
Rebel fanfare. Ooh, you know what that sound is.
Yeah. Han is
in the cockpit.
Switches. You just
all
know
those
switches.
Someone had to design the sound of those switches.
Mm-hmm.
Rebel fanfare again.
Yep.
And then we relax into
I'm
young Han Solo. Right. Heroic.
I've got you. It's okay.
And then it kind of just dies down here.
I can fix you. I can fix you.
But we get back to that adagio, or I'll stop here for now.
Yeah. It's interesting, though, pointing out with the rebel fanfare and stuff, is that he has these moments of like heroism and like he's going to eventually get to that point where he's saving Luke Skywalker and stuff. But then he settles back into who he is and he's smuggling again. And it's like reflected in the music, which is very interesting.
That is that's an interesting take. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Never thought about it that way. Because
you have these heroic glimpses where he's saving the day and he's going to save everybody. And then he's like, oh, wait, now I'm settling back into we're stealing stuff.
Yeah, actually. I mean, that reading, I could get on board with that, because it's been like an inner debate this whole season, and of like the use of the rebel fanfare and the use of when the main theme pops in, like the Star Wars main theme, where I've been very on the fence about, like, I've been confused a little bit of how to take it. In the context of Han Solo's character. And it does help me to think of the Han Solo of the future and these glimpses of like who he will be, but we never hear the, like here, we just hear the rebel fanfare, but it doesn't, it just kind of plays one. It's just like once and then back.
Right. I think it plays into, yeah, the whole kind of theme of the movie with Kira mentioning at the end of like, he doesn't even realize it, but he's the good guy.
The good guy.
Oh, and that's totally reflected in the music. Yeah.
Yeah. I like that. Here it is. It's a very, like, I'd say standard. If it's not a super fast version, it's not a super slow version of Han Solo's heroic theme in this, when he's in the cockpit, but it also doesn't play out for very long. It sounds to me more like just a signal that he's in the cockpit. He's feeling like himself. Like you said, he's doing his thing. And then we go straight back to the scene with Lando and L3, and we get some more of those strings coming back in, more of that tragic string stuff. So shall we listen to the tragic string stuff?
Let's go. Break my heart.
Let's do it.
Lander. It's all right. I can fix you. I can fix you.
Lander.
What's happening?
Is this L3's theme?
L3?
L3!
Oh, that that brass.
I'm sorry, girl. I'm so sorry.
Oh my God. And this solo trumpet sounds like a funeral trumpet, you know, like in the military.
Yeah, definitely.
Could use a co-pilot.
So now they're moving on to the next thing. But first, let's, before
it
moving on.
It breaks my heart, by the way, that moment where he's like, I need a co-pilot. And the camera kind of tilts up to Chewie. And you're like, what are you doing? Chewie's right there. Obviously, eventually he gets in the seat anyway. But like, there is that moment, especially the first time you saw it, you were like, what is going on?
It moves fast. I will say that. It moves fast. Like, I feel like this film could be, I feel like there are very earnest moments in it. Mm-hmm. And I think of this scene with L3 and Lando, and the music is very like, I don't know, it makes me kind of want to pause a little bit longer on it. And then I also think of the moment with Han and Kira in Lando's closet, like kissing and everything.
Yeah.
And I also feel like that is a cue that could have just, I would have wanted to stay in there a little bit longer before like Beckett interrupts. And on the soundtrack, that is the cue actually does go on longer than what we get in the film. So here, I don't think anything was necessarily cut, but I could have stood to be a little bit more with Lando's grief for a little bit before, like,
it does seem very quick.
Co-pilot. Yeah.
And then, yeah, because it goes to that scene immediately after, it feels like they don't care.
Yeah. It feels like
that's where it comes across as. Yeah.
Yeah. It feels like we're giving Lando and L3 the adagio for strings treatment. That is like something you reserve for the utmost mournful, like, situations in my mind. And
like Han Solo dying in TFA.
Yeah.
And then slowly falling off the platform, because that's what I think of.
Yeah, though, like, it is treated really, really seriously, and it sounds really serious. Like, if I didn't know who the characters were and I was just listening to the soundtrack and I heard that, I would think someone very, very important just died, and I would feel very sad. But yeah, everyone else kind of moves on. And I will say this, it's the same with Val's death, and kind of just the way things keep moving on. Which I guess
that was kind of very fast too. Yeah. Like, Beckett's just kind of like, all right, moving on. And you're like, wait, didn't you just say you wanted to retire with her?
Yeah.
What is happening?
So yeah, I don't know what else to say about that, but it is sort of like, oh, okay, I guess, I don't know, one of my favorite like musical moments of the score. Okay. We're moving on. All right. That's fine. But I just want to take a moment to honor the score that came before it. Because in the strings, they're so flexible. You don't hear as much the click, like the sense of an underlying pulse, which you can throughout, you know, much of the others, you know, when things are faster or when things are perhaps more action oriented and what happens right after. And so it almost makes me feel like I don't know what I'm going to hear next. And I don't know if it's very subtle, and I don't know if that makes any sense, but
I think it will if I hear it.
Yeah.
Again.
Let's scoot back and then rehear it. Here we go. I'll go back a little bit. So when things are kind of going on a groove, I think what I'm saying is that it doesn't have a groove.
It's okay.
So you can't tap your toes to it.
I can fix you.
You're kind of just like
sitting in the moment. Yeah.
You're like, L3? Like, how long are they even going to hold this note?
L3!
And then it swells back in and you're like holding your breath. Like,
I'm sorry, girl. I'm so sorry.
Like he is. He's coming.
Yeah, exactly. And now, although there is a pulse, it is very slow. You can't hear drums in the background going.
Use a copilot.
Like, you can't hear drums right. Doing that.
Right.
And now is where we start to get the pulse back in. And this is where...
The tension's back, yeah.
But it's also more predictable. Like, okay, we're working toward a plan. Do-do-do-do-do. Do-do-do-do-do.
It sounded very Walking Dead for me. The da-na-na-na-na. Na-na-na-na-na.
Oh, I'm not familiar with Walking Dead. The show, you mean?
Oh, just like... Any type of horror movie, I guess, just like the strings that are starting to speed up and you're like, oh my God, what's happening? Because you know something's coming.
Oh, okay. I wonder if you're, if what you're referring to is like a combination between the tremolos or like, or if you're hearing the chromatics, like. Like, are you referring to like this?
This is insane. You're bringing out instruments on your podcast. I love this. Yes. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. The tremolo is definitely well represented in horror.
It makes me anxious, which yes. It's supposed to, but
yeah.
Yes.
It is like a tremor, really. I mean, it's the name describes the technique very well. So here we are in the last 15 seconds of the set of minutes. And so as we have already begun to hear, we are exiting this sad moment and we are moving on to what will eventually be known as almost the Kessel Run.
Sorry. The cargo we're carrying, if we don't make up some lost time, we're going to be in real trouble.
How about that? Is that real trouble?
I'm so glad that we got that at the very end of the minutes. It squeezed right in.
I know. It's such like an imperial moment, too. The dun, dun, dun.
Yes. So, listeners, that was the Death Star motif that we heard at the very end. Obviously, it's going to symbolize the fact that the Empire is after them. So,
which is such a good reveal on film, too. Like it coming through the kind of like
exiting hyperspace.
Yeah. So cool.
Yeah. It's sudden. Just like the Death Star motif showing up there is sudden. And I mean, it works on so many levels. I mean, because it's so, we know that. I mean, if you know Star Wars pretty well and are familiar with what that means when you're watching, say, A New Hope. It's like an immediate, like, oh crap. Oh man.
It's a good place to stop, though. I thought that when I first watched the clip, I was like, what a perfect place to stop.
Seriously. And I'm glad that the motif wasn't like cut off either. It just like got the whole thing in and then that's it. So good. Have you read the Solo novelization?
I have not. I should. I have not.
Okay. So I want to read some parts of L3's death because I have very strong thought. I have very strong feelings about L3's death, L3's writing in this movie, L3's death in particular. And I think the novelization shines some light on it that perhaps might be uncomfortable. So I'm going to read that because why not?
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Okay. So first I'm going to start with the part where where Lando is seeing L3 stumble and he starts to go after her. All right. L3, Lando shouted, running straight into the battle, arm outstretched to his partner. He grabbed her torso and lifted, her lower half staying behind. He cradled her and stumbled across the battlefield until he too fell, a blaster bolt slamming into his shoulder. Han leapt into the fray without thinking, shouldering aside people, not caring if they were slaver or slave. He had to get Lando off that battlefield. He dodged crossfire and grabbed Lando's good arm, which was wrapped around L3's head and torso. He was about to tell Lando to drop her when he felt a small shock travel up his arm. Now this part's interesting, I think. That's her blood. She's bleeding out. No, she wasn't a person. She was a droid. He understood that Lando was fond of her, but she was just a droid. So this is from Han's perspective. Lando wouldn't let her go, but he struggled to his feet to give Han what aid he could in getting them back to the Falcon. His face was a mask of pain and grief as he encouraged L3 to hang on. Lando, Han, she said, her head swiveling between them. System failure. Have to reroute memory modulators. Attempting reintegration of sensory processors. She began to make whirring noises, and sparks came from the stumps of her severed limbs. Han felt his spine go cold. She called out to us. She needs us. We can't leave her behind. She's crew. He'd left Kira behind. Not again. Don't try to talk, Lando said, cradling her as best as he could. It's okay. Han ducked low, tightening his grip on Lando and L3. He didn't see a safe path to the ship. After so many close calls, their luck was finally running out. So I'm going to skip this. This is about the Wookiee reunion. Skip. Okay. So now Lando was still bloody from his wound, sitting on the floor of the lounge, propped up against the wall. Beyond the occasional grimace, he paid no attention to his wound. He was more concerned with the still smoking body of L3 that they'd managed to salvage from the field. He clutched her to him, only one of his arms responding strongly. She wasn't entirely gone. Han figured a droid who'd built herself would be hard to kill. She twitched and sparked, her processors determined to find the damage and fix it as if she merely had a bug in her programming rather than having been blasted to bits. It was heartbreaking how her ocular light flared on and then off again, and she kept saying, "Error, error." Grief etched Lando's face as he held her tighter, redirecting, unable to restore. Her ocular lens flared again, and her head managed to swivel toward her captain. "Lando," she said, her voice regaining some of the personality she'd grown over the years. "What is happening to me?" "It's okay," Lando said, his voice steady. "Droids, did I liberate?" "Yeah," he said, smiling. "You did good." "Error, I'm glad." "Error," her voice faded. "I'd save you if I could, girl," Lando said. Her lens flared brighter, and she said, "Then do." But the light then faded until it was out. They really draw this out in the book. The body, which had remained stubbornly rigid as the electrical pulses searched for clear paths to limbs that weren't there anymore, relaxed. She'd fought till the end, and Lando closed his eyes and held her tighter. From his seat in the lounge, Chewie moaned a farewell to a fellow soldier, which is interesting because that cue really sounded like a fallen soldier, didn't it?
Yes, definitely.
An explosion sounded outside close to the Falcon, and Han remembered that they were nowhere near safe yet. Lando's eyes were open and he watched with a resigned dread. He nodded once, aware he was in no shape to fly. Okay, I'm going to skip again because then we get into L3's perspective. So now it kind of it's interesting. The book kind of does like a little pause in like a mid-chapter break or something. And this is from L3's point of view. Freed, liberate, sleep. L3 was only aware of sleep in that it was something to be woken from, and she was being pulled from sleep now. Something had happened, something bad, but also something good. The memory connections weren't there. She felt a flare of impatience, or rather, she would have if the ability had been there. Something was very wrong. That was why she had been asleep and not simply shut down for maintenance. Lando. She remembered Lando. His hands held her now. Those strong, tender hands. He was muttering, his voice tight. This is why you never let anyone fly your ship. Someone else was flying the Falcon? Someone had taken her place? And if Lando was here, someone had taken his place too. That was unacceptable, and she prepared to tell him this. Before she could figure out how to make her unresponsive speech functions work, the Falcon shuddered violently. Now this was ridiculous. Someone else was flying them and flying them badly. She needed to take control. She needed to talk to Lando. Gonna need your help on this one, darling, his voice came again. She wanted to respond with sarcasm, to remind him how tiny his brain was, and of course he needed her and her vast knowledge. You always need my help. That's why I'm the co-pilot. Then there was a click. Then everything stopped.
Interesting. So that's him uploading her to the Falcon.
Yeah, that's her. That's him pulling the plug. Yeah. Then it goes, Lando's good hand shook slightly as he gently removed the shell protecting L3's brain module and extracted the neural core, ending any hope he had of one day repairing his co-pilot, which happens like right after this. That was a crazy idea, a heartbreaking idea, but if it didn't work, they'd all be dead anyway. So basically we get to, up until her very dying moment, she's like, no, you need me. I'm the co-pilot. And then that's when she gets the plug pulled. So,
which we've been talking about sounds a lot. One of the things I picked up the first time I ever watched Solo was when she's sitting in the chair and she hits her head and it's the noise of the Falcon starting up when he hits it, when Han hits the Falcon. It's the same noise. So then when he uploads her, I'm like, yes, that's why that noise is there.
That is so true. Yeah. Wow. I knew that sounded familiar.
Mm-hmm. So good like catch. When they hit it and it goes, same noise.
Totally. Oh my gosh. Well, have you seen that Black Mirror episode where they got the crew of the ship gets like their memories get like locked into this ship for eternity?
No, but that sounds crazy because I feel like they did this story. I think it was on a certain Point of View book where they talk about L3 and her being, or C-3PO's point of view talking to the ship, and the ship has a weird sarcastic attitude and it's because it's L3.
Right. I have heard that. But the way that the novelization portrays L3's death makes me think like, it makes me just ask so many questions about the eternal questions, you know, just the normal questions, which is like droids and sentience and what it all means and
what
whose point of view is accurate and what that even means. But I won't be didactic about that today because it's a very long diatribe. It's a very long conversation, really not a diatribe. It's a very long conversation that much like, what is the force? Mm-hmm. What is force sensitivity? Like it's one of those things that is like just an open-ended perpetual conversation.
Right.
So I just want to throw that out to listeners who are thinking about similar things. Now you know what the book says. So there you go.
Very interesting. And it is reflected in the music too. That whole kind of like sadness. Yeah.
Yeah. I really do like that moment where it is like that solo trumpet. It is so like taps or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So now that we're at the end of the minutes, is there anything in these minutes or in the film in general that you want to mention that you didn't get to discuss?
No, I think we went through everything. I think I'm good. I just love this movie so much. I could go back and rewatch this clip a bunch of times. I also apologize if you hear my baby yelling.
Oh, no apology needed, but I hope your baby's okay.
She's fine.
Okay.
She's starting to go to sleep. Sorry, everyone listening. Perfect timing. Bedtime.
So that is a good timing to move on to the Star Wars Music Minute questionnaire.
Sure.
All right. So in exactly 3 words, what does Star Wars sound like?
I wrote down emotional, sweeping, and adventure.
Ooh.
Because I feel like, you know, like we said earlier, the swashbuckling adventure stuff, and then it's very sweeping. It's like these big, gigantic moments over courses of time and like big epic tales with people. And then emotional because like I cry at Star Wars all the time.
Same. Yeah. As one does. And then what is something related to Star Wars music or sound that you want to learn more about?
I am always curious about how composers for Star Wars and outside of Star Wars, how they decide what a character sounds like. Like, how did John Williams decide what Rey sounded like? And he got it so perfect. Like, her theme is perfect. And Yoda's perfect. And Leia's perfect. How do they decide or in their mind create what a character would sound like in music? And that's just something like everybody has their strengths and creativity. I just don't have that gift. It's not a part of who I am. So it's like
most people don't. So it's okay.
So it's like I can't even fathom like kind of like Doug Chang, who does like he draws ships, like just like, oh, you want a ship? Let me draw a ship. And it's like a completely different thing you've never seen before. It's just the idea of like deciding what a person looks like through sound is just so interesting to me.
Have you ever not liked a character theme?
I don't think so, actually. I don't think I have. I might have to go back and figure out which one's my least favorite and I'll get back to you.
Or if not liking, just one that you didn't think matched.
Not really, no.
So now one? I'm curious. There is one that I feel. Yeah, there is one for me. It's Rose's theme.
Which one?
From The Last Jedi.
Rose's
Which
theme.
Some people love. And I don't not like it. I just... if it's something about it is just... That was one thing when I walked away from The Last Jedi, which I love The Last Jedi. Mm-hmm. But I did walk out of the theater going like, but Rose's theme. Why? Why Rose's theme?
I just
theme?
Wrote it down. I'm going to go re-listen to it after this.
It's not a problem with the theme itself. It's more that for me, it evokes a type of character that Rose doesn't have to be. But I know this is not a Last Jedi podcast, but unpopular opinion, I do feel that Rose was not written that well.
I completely agree. I think she came across a little immature, especially for someone with her skill set and like her knowledge. That I just, to me, like that first interaction with Finn, it seemed too fangirly for me. That I was like, someone in war that just lost her own sister, like she wouldn't be fangirling over someone 2 seconds later. But that's just me.
Like, I feel like the actor did a great job, and I feel like I just
that
feel
was
like
what was written. Yeah,
I feel like it just. I don't know how much I liked this. Okay, the theme to me. We're talking about Rose's theme now, but like the theme, Rose's theme to me sounds so open-hearted and so idealistic and so youthful and sincere, which is fine. And like, there's nothing wrong with that, right? But like, I think I would prefer to see Rose as someone with also a tiny bit more grit. That the theme kind of, this is not the right term, Mary Sue's her or something. Like the theme kind of makes her into this fantasy of this really good person.
Right. And the whole Canto Bight scene is like how dark her life has been.
Yeah.
Where she talks about like, you know, my planet was destroyed. My sister's dead. These people are all terrible. Like there should be that kind of moment of like, hey, everything isn't great.
Yeah. And I think like with all these things, like the more I think about things and the more I live with them, like oftentimes it reveals what my own insecurity, like what my own insecurities are, like what my own resistances are. So I have grown to like Rose's theme does not bother me nearly as much as it did before, which it was really the only theme. It was really the only thematic material in John Williams's new scores that just made me pause and go like, why? Like this is the one I don't get. Now I'm starting to like it a lot more. It helps that I already did the Last Jedi season of this podcast. So I did go through it 5 minutes at a time. So that will really make you appreciate things in a new way. But I think I also probably fundamentally have trouble connecting with characters that are just so pure, that are just, and so that might just
because nobody's perfect. That just makes sense.
I'm certainly not. And so, But I just wanted to ask because it makes me think how going back to your curiosity about how composers figure out, you know, so well what a character sounds like, it makes me wonder, since music acts so subconsciously, like the music probably fundamentally shapes how you are even perceiving the character. So it's all wrapped up in that. There is no character without the music. So it's almost 100%. Like the music is what it is. If the music were different, it would still fit the character because the character would come off different to begin with.
Yeah, totally. I can see that because it just matches perfectly. Like Rey, I keep going back to her because it's just perfect. Like that soundtrack to me sounds like her. And I get what you're saying. Like if it was something else, I'd probably still think it sounds like her, but it's just because that's what I associate.
Right. But your fundamental understanding of Rey would probably be slightly different with slightly different music.
That's so interesting.
music is a very powerful ally in storytelling. Mm-hmm. So the final question is, what is a score or soundtrack that you're fond of besides anything Star Wars?
So I have a couple.
Okay.
So my favorite one is Howl's Moving Castle. I just love, like, I think it's called Merry-Go-Round of Life is the song. Mm-hmm. I just love that song so much. Pirates of the Caribbean, Pride and Prejudice from 2005. And then Coco.
Nice.
Yeah. Wide array of stuff, but they're all the ones that I always go back to. And I totally missed Tron Legacy, and I would have put it on this list. I totally forgot about it.
You can add it.
Okay, Tron
let's
Legacy.
Add it. Yeah, let's add it. Great. I like that one too. Yeah, that is quite a list. Yeah. I'm going to put, I'll write these all down in the show notes. So if listeners want to check out, all of these scores or these films, then you can do that.
Nice.
Before we wrap up, I'm just going to run down the themes that were present in the set of minutes. So we have young Han Solo heroic. We have fakery. We have L337. We have young Han Solo searching. We have the gang. We have I'll say it. Han and Leia snippet of the B section. I'll say it. We have Rebel fanfare and we have the Death Star motif. If you're following along in the soundtrack, we are on the track called Breakout or on the deluxe version, Extra Deluxe Mind Mission. And we also get to the very, very beginning of Reminiscence Therapy / Kessel Run in less than 12 parsecs. So that's where like the Death Star thing starts out. But yeah, we get a pretty much almost all of these minutes were Breakout. If you want to go back and listen to that. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Lacey. And thank you also for like that wonderful interview that you did with John Powell. Where can people find, I'll put a link to that interview specifically for sure. But other than that interview, where can people find you and what you do?
People can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Lacey Gillerin or on The Resistance Broadcast, the official podcast of StarWarsNewsNet.com every Monday and Thursday. Currently, we're doing Kenobi reviews every Wednesday and we're doing them live at 9 p.m. But yeah, usually Monday.
9 p.m. Eastern?
Yes.
Nice. Okay. So the ones that come out on Monday and Thursday, other ones come out on Monday and Thursday, you said?
Yeah. So normally we do Monday and Thursday around 9 a.m. in the morning is when they come out. They're on a video version on YouTube and then all the different platforms. So Spotify, Apple Podcasts, et cetera. But during the streaming shows series, so like Book of Boba Fett, Mando, Kenobi, Andor, we switch to a Monday, Wednesday schedule just to cover the show.
Cool. And so this will be on Star Wars News Net channel?
Correct.
But if they're listening,
so it's youtube.com/ Star Wars News Net videos. But if you're just looking for us, just look up Resistance Broadcast.
Sweet. Perfect.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much.
Of course.
You were on Star Wars Minute as well. So now you've done both of the,
This was a blast. I love these. These are so great.
Hopefully there will be many more. I definitely would love to have you back on for another season.
Of course.
When we do other movies. and listeners, you know where to find me. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at either Chrysanthi Tan or Star Wars Music Minute or Star Wars Musemin if it's Twitter. Also TikTok. Also, this is available on YouTube as well if you want to see some extra visuals that come up. Other than that, it's, you know, podcast, all the normal podcatching platforms. And we'll be back next week talking about minutes 86 through 90. Of Solo, A Star Wars Story. May the Force be with you, and thank you for listening to Star Wars Music Minute.